This is Scenic Roots. I'm Ray Bassett. Thanks for joining us. Here in Chattanooga, SkillUp is a series of courses to help workers upgrade their skills for better jobs while still getting paid to go to school. It's a partnership between Chattanooga State, the Benwood Foundation, the Chattanooga Area Chamber of Commerce, and local employers. Last month, the Regions Foundation, the philanthropic organization of Regions Bank, donated $90,000 to support three new groups of 15 students in the SkillUp courses. Michael Mathis is market executive at Regions Bank. Michael, thanks for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me.
Tell us more about SkillUp.
SkillUp is a program that the Chattanooga Chamber had experimented with in the past, but didn't have funding to continue. And so when I heard a little bit about the program and I was convinced it was a perfect fit for Regions and things we want to do in our community. So SkillUp provides a training wage. It provides industry recognized credentials, and it helps the participants secure full-time employment with a living wage after the program is complete.
And how did it hit your radar?
As a company, we are extremely committed to making a positive difference in the communities that we serve, right? And that sounds really like a nice sentiment, and it looks good on paper, but it really is part of a clear strategy of our company. We live here, we work here, we really see ourselves as partners in the success of our communities. When our communities are successful, we're going to be successful. So we recently adopted a much more strategic approach towards community engagement, a clear focus on creating and supporting more inclusive prosperity. We really want to help level that playing field. Our belief is when more people have a chance to succeed in our communities, we're going to succeed. So we're focusing our time, our talents, and then our financial resources on causes that empower more people. So I reached out to my network in the community. I've lived here and worked here my entire life. So I reached out to our friends at United Way and the Chamber, was telling them about our refocusing our strategic priorities, and SkillUp immediately popped into their mind as a program that might be a perfect fit. This was pre-pandemic. This was almost a year ago when this discussion began, but it didn't take long to realize that the SkillUp program was a really good fit.
Workforce development is a perpetual challenge, but only magnified by the state of the economy during this pandemic.
The pandemic exacerbated what I feel are the differences and the gap in our community between maybe some people who have participated in the success of our community and then maybe some people who haven't. And I think COVID and the pandemic really exacerbated that. And so when we started looking at SkillUp, to me, the vital ingredients that it contains, first and foremost, is the training wage. That has always been a huge impediment to training programs because people can't, in most cases, they don't have the wherewithal, their ability to quit their job and enter into a six-week training program that's going to get them further in their career or their life. This program addresses that right up front. The training wage, I think, is critical. Providing industry recognized credentials. So having Chattanooga State, another partner, come in and provide the 3 weeks of in-the-classroom training with the input and the help of partner employers. So you're getting industry-recognized credentials and you're getting training specific to jobs that they will be rolling into after that 3 week training period is up. Then they have 3 additional weeks of on-the-job training at the employer. And at the end of the day, they're going to end up with full-time employment, with a living wage, that it's certainly going to transform their careers. But boy, just to hear some of the early stories, it's just already transforming lives. And that's why we're so excited about the program. It provides all the ingredients to be wildly successful, and it has support in all avenues throughout the program.
We talk about the nuts and bolts and the needs out there, but we want to get across some of these examples that you're talking about of people affected. You mentioned that you've heard and seen people who have been helped by this. Tell me a story or two.
I'll tell you two or three stories real quick. One participant was on the wait list for the program and was fairly distraught because they really wanted to be in the program. Eventually got in, but admitted on the first day of the program, they really don't know how to use a computer at all. It's really hard to imagine in today's economy not knowing how to use a computer. But in spite of that, that person maintained perfect attendance so far, showing himself to be a very active and potentially a very wildly successful participant in the program. Another one works third shift. So this one maintained their job. He sleeps from 6 a.m. to 8 a.m. in his car at Chattanooga State, goes to a full day of training, sleeps a little after the training, and then goes to his third shift job. And he's also shown to be very successful in the program, which is hard to fathom not having a good night's sleep and still trying to participate and learn. But he's proven to be very successful thus far. And then the last story I'll tell you is a participant that's actually currently homeless. She sleeps in her car every night at Chattanooga State. She has perfect attendance, and she is completing this program successfully. But where the support of our partners in United Way steps in here, I've been very involved with the United Way over the years, and they're stepping in to provide, with their Building Stable Lives program, providing her secure, stable housing and other resources so she can be successful in this program. And that's where it all comes together, when you get every partner playing their part in helping our community be successful. And to me, that's one of the biggest changes Chattanooga has made over the last several years, is the partnerships and people like the Chamber and United Way and Chattanooga State and Hamilton County Schools working together to really help our community benefit.
And the needs go on beyond this pandemic, especially with the stories that so many of us read before the pandemic about the need for training, the need for retraining. However things shake out with automation and all of these other trends that will be with us for years to come.
Yeah, this certainly isn't anything new. It's been exacerbated by the pandemic. At Regions, we, and I mentioned sort of how we refocused, and the strategy around that has three key strategic priorities: education and workforce readiness, right? Making sure people have the opportunity, which is exactly what SkillUp does. Financial wellness. We offer free financial wellness programs, either delivered by our bankers who have a unique skill set to do that, or through free online through our Next Step program to anybody. So we really feel like financial wellness is critical. The third key priority of our strategy is economic and community development. SkillUp also falls right within that. We want to make investments in the community that are measurable, they're strategic, and at the end of the day, that's where Regions over time, that's where we can be successful, and where our experience shows that if we focus on those priorities, that our communities will benefit, and that's where we can be the most effective as well. So it's been here, it's been a challenge in the past, certainly a challenge today, and it's going to continue to be a challenge. But to see our community working together and partners working together to provide more inclusion and prosperity for all of our citizens is the exciting part today.
And if people want more information, where can they go online? Where can they call?
Cynthia Brooks at ChattanoogaState.ed is probably your first point of contact. She is running the program with Chattanooga State, and that would be the best place to start. She's Cynthia.Brooks@ChattanoogaState.edu.
All right. Michael, thanks so much.
Ray, thank you again for having me.
SoundCore, the nonprofit that supports musicians in the Chattanooga area, recently created a new program to increase access to the training and technology involved in professional-grade live streaming. It is called Bandwidth. Stratton Tingle is Executive Director of SoundCore. Stratton, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Tell us more about Bandwidth.
Yeah, so the Bandwidth program is a way for us to help local musicians connect with online audiences a little bit better. Obviously, during this COVID-19 pandemic, shutting down the live music scene and pretty much all live concerts of any magnitude at all, it's never been more important for local musicians to connect with online audiences. And a great way to do that is through live streaming. Most folks have sort of limited capabilities for producing a high quality live stream. So we were able to apply for a state grant that allowed us to purchase quite a bit of pretty high quality live streaming equipment that we are using to train local musicians and folks who may be friends of local musicians to run live streams that are fairly high quality. Now we've, just as everyone else, have hit a few bumps in the road, just as with any new technology, we've had our own live streams go on pause for a minute here or there. It's been a learning curve for everyone involved, but we're confident now that we've got all the kinks worked out and we are opening up, we have opened up signups for the Bandwidth program. So local musicians can sign up to schedule a time to learn how to use this equipment and produce their own live stream.
So what does the training involve and how long does it take?
Well, it essentially involves putting on a live stream. Usually there's maybe 2 hours ahead of time. I mean, kind of depends. If it's a full band, it's going to take a little bit longer because of load in and instruments and things. A lot of folks are not comfortable, are not currently playing in full bands. So we see a lot of solos and duo artists. And so load in is not so crazy. It sort of depends on the situation, but generally there's load in, there's setup, and there's sort of doing a little bit of a test run. And then the full live stream, which is usually 30 minutes to an hour. So generally a good, you know, full morning or full afternoon of work to train on the equipment and then actually produce the first live stream. The goal from here is, beyond sort of getting folks trained up with the equipment, is to allow people to check the equipment out, much like you would do from the public library, say, and use this equipment to do your own live streams from wherever you choose to do them from. We've been really fortunate to be able to work with the Chattanooga Choo Choo and have taken over their former music venue space that was below the Songbirds Guitar Museum and is currently below the Songbirds Foundation. We've sort of internally kind of rebranded it as SoundCore Studios because it's fun, but we're only in there for a little bit, you know, for a few months really, while we sort of train up our artists. And then from there, hopefully people will be able to know how to use the equipment. It's kind of high-end equipment, so there's a lot of different moving parts involved. It's not just checking out a tablet or a phone and putting it in selfie mode and starting playing the song. It's a little bit more intense than that, but hopefully the idea is that people will be able to check the equipment out and produce streams of their own.
The artists that you've been working with so far, what have you been hearing from them? What have been their typical questions, typical challenges?
It's a bit of a challenging, there's a lot to unpack here. So I'm struggling with where exactly to start with this answer. First of all, I would say audio quality is of pretty high importance to most artists. So we want to be sure that folks running this equipment understand best practices with how to mix and mix their live audio and run all aspects of live audio. So if the artist, or oftentimes it's like a friend who's working with the artist who may be an audio engineer or know a little bit more about what they're doing with setting up like a PA system, those folks may need a little help, but usually those folks kind of know what they're doing with setting up an audio stream. The more intense aspect of it is the equipment that we use for the video portion of the live stream. We're using a open source software called OBS. A lot of folks in the streaming community have been familiar with that software for years. I've used it before in sort of past lives and in other, you know, events. And then we have sort of almost like a video mixer that brings in video from external cameras, and you can sort of switch between cameras almost like you would see in a television studio. And so there's a little bit of a learning curve on that. But generally, most of the components are sort of plug and play. So, you know, we have all the correct cables to hook devices up to each other. The computer kind of takes it all and mixes it all together and pushes it out. So for those that are familiar with how to set up like a live PA, for instance, it's pretty intuitive to add the video component. But that's kind of the big hurdle, is adding the video component and switching between multiple cameras and multiple inputs and making it all come together to work together. One of the things that is just a difficult truth about the whole process is the money that you're making from live streams is nowhere near what you're making generally from doing shows in person. But we're playing with the cards that we've got on the table right now, and we're making the best of it. We've also had this great opportunity to build skills. These skills can translate into a lot of different aspects of a person's professional career outside of music even. So we're happy to be able to help folks grow in that way, and hope that we can effectively connect people again with their fans online.
Give us a highlight or two of what else is going on at SoundCore right now or around the corner.
The Bandwidth program has been our major focus for about the last, 6 weeks or so. Before that, we were pretty focused on the Chattanooga Area Musicians Relief Fund, during which the second round of funding, we wrote right at $100,000 of direct assistance to regional musicians. We are certainly keeping the Chattanooga Area Musicians Relief Fund round three on the table as a possibility, although we don't have anything secured right now or any kind of announcement that says applications are open. But as the pandemic, sort of drags on, I don't think that people that are in my age bracket with my health, with my sort of comorbidities, are going to be vaccinated till early fall at the earliest. I don't think we're going to see a return to normal activity until that time at the earliest. So it's going to be important for us to keep tabs on some of these relief efforts and continuing to connect musicians to online audiences, and then continuing to run a lot of our regular programming, things like Craft Masters, things like Take Note. You know, these are programs that are designed to help local musicians and music industry professionals to build their careers through continuing education and through business development. So we're going to continue doing those things. A lot of those have transitioned, like we are today, to Zoom, but that's okay. They've actually been working out pretty well, and we're going to keep on trucking in that direction.
And where can people go online for more information about Bandwidth and everything else at SoundCore?
It's easy, soundcore.org. And SoundCore is spelled like AmeriCorps or Peace Corps. That's soundcorps.org. Bandwidth is just soundcore.org/bandwidth. You can always go to our About page and navigate to any of our programs from there.
All right, Stratton, thanks so much.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Glasshouse Collective is a nonprofit dedicated to bringing life back to Glass Street in East Chattanooga. Teal Tebow is the collective's director, and Erica Roberts is its creative strategist. Teal, Erica, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
You have been busy at Glasshouse Collective. So many things to talk about. One thing I want to talk about right away is the health clinic.
Yes, Purpose Point Community Health is opened up down the street from us at 2800 North Chamberlain. It is led by Miss Catherine Lynn Jeter, and it's a part of the Village 2800 Church, and they are doing incredible things. They recently opened their doors and taking patients, uninsured patients. We are so excited to have them as a healthy anchor in our community.
I like that, too. Healthy anchor. Come on now. I like that.
Already, this clinic is providing for such a need in the neighborhood.
There's been a massive need for this in our community. And now that the clinic is open and accepting patients, I think that we're still trying as a collective, as a neighborhood, to get the word out. So thank you for this opportunity, and really just make sure that everyone knows that this clinic is there and it is open. So I think that's kind of the first step. When we spoke with Ms. Jeter and the good folks over there, we talked a lot about the fact that we've been working on health outcomes, but from a public realm standpoint, right, it looks a lot different, right? It's more a built environment type of work. So we were just so thrilled to know that we're able to pair kind of a holistic health approach now with this clinic. So we're really looking forward to continuing to partner with them and just appreciate how involved and active they've been in other community projects. Like, they were really involved in the live drive-through nativity event that the community put together. Glasshouse did not do that. We showed up as a support agent. That was not our project. And it was incredible. And they were a part of making that happen. So just having active participation from another kind of business owner health clinic is such a positive outcome. But then even more, what this will do in regards to health in our community, we're really looking forward to seeing what that does.
And also with the pandemic, we noticed early on that marginalized communities were hit harder through with COVID, with the underlying diseases that, made marginalized communities, Black and brown people more susceptible to COVID. And so I think that, and I don't know if you call it a positive, but I think it's a uptake that people are concerned about their health and wanting to know, you know, what their risks are, and having something this easy, proverbially at their fingertips in their community right up the street, that they can go and get tested. You know, they can find out how to test if they're diabetic. They can go test for all the things that have put that community, marginalized communities, at risk for COVID. And also, if they have questions, you know, it's a great place to start with those questions. So I think it is a plus. And to use Teal's phrase, a healthy anchor. I like that a lot.
They did host the drive-through COVID testing site earlier as like one of their first events. So they've definitely been really accessible to the community, which has been great.
Speaking of holistic, let's talk about the Save a Lot. Let's talk about the mural.
Yeah, so Glass House Collective has really been focused on improving the public realm of the community. And so we started a lot of our work at the North Chamberlain Glass Street intersection. And over the past few years, we've been focused at Dodson and Glass Street. And a part of that work has really been having our neighbors and hiring artists to really create a vision for that intersection and then advocate for new sidewalks and street trees and just general beautification to aid into what we hope now is that, you know, now we have a grocery store and we didn't have that before. And so hopefully it's less of folks driving through and more folks stopping and shopping, but then also walking to and from their houses to get grocery. And so what is that? How do we make this a safer, more inviting and connected intersection? And so that's been a lot of our work over the past year and what we're going to continue to do in the new year. And so a big part of that is we are excited to put in an asphalt art mural on Crutchfield Street right in front of the Save a Lot in the spring.
I think having a grocery store in a community, it feeds differently, you know, for play on words, it feeds the community in a way of creating a space possibly for gathering when we can. It has the potential to do so much more and also keep people in the community, people stopping. As Till said, I have been excited about having that grocery store because I know of the power of having a store in a community and the types of engagements and the types of things can go on around it. And then the possibilities of when you add art into a factor with an entity, however you do that, it just boasts even more of what the engagement is. And also it boasts even more of what the community means and what the community can do. I've been really excited. I have some really good ideas. I know Till has heard them over and over again, of fun stuff to do around having a grocery store in your community. I grew up with having a mom and pop grocery store around, and I can remember them doing special things in the neighborhood and being able to even talk about doing a mural nearby, near there, with the community in mind. The possibilities of the two together, that's amazing community work, amazing engagement possibilities as well. As an artist, I get giggly about that kind of stuff. So.
And there is an opportunity ahead for the community to provide their input.
Yes, we will be launching the community survey. We'll have three mural designs, and we are going to try to figure out how to do this digitally and by paper. We're going to be scaling the 37406 voice and vote a lot higher than others. We're really trying to zero in on the East Chattanooga community, what they want to see there. Three designs to choose from. So that will be really exciting. And the two artists that are working on that is Courtney Brown, also known as Tucson. He grew up in East Chattanooga. And he's working on that with Kevin Bate, who most of us know as a muralist on walls. And so he's excited about the challenge of doing a mural on the ground. So we're excited about that. There was a lot of extensive engagement that Erica led at the elementary school. And we had a workshop that was safely distant back in October to really get the right kind of engagement and community feedback for the designers to be able to even come up with the concept, because we felt like that was really important to the process. And then hopefully, fingers crossed, in the spring, the community can come out and help make it happen. So it would be a participatory event that hopefully some of Erica's fun other engagement, artistic engagement ideas can happen around as well.
Yay. I'm excited about that.
We should also talk about the little free library.
Yeah, so it's fun over the years, Ray, to see things in the community pop up and Glasshouse not have anything to do with. And this is an example of that. The little free library was installed, I don't know, I want to say 4 years ago by some committed residents. And it's been incredible to see the partnerships that they've established with Memorial Hospital to share books, just like random folks dropping off new books for the community and the neighbors keeping up the little free library. And so, and then most recently, there's also a little free pantry close to the Save-A-Lot as well that community members designed and built, and it just popped up overnight. And so those are all the things similar to the live nativity scene. It's really incredible. You know, I think a lot of folks think, like Erica mentioned in regards to the health clinic, you know, I think a lot of folks think, oh, this is a marginalized community. But this community has incredible people, and they are the assets that make up this community, and they make it happen. And we are in Glasshouse is happy and happy to support however we can. And there are times where we're not even needed, and that's even better. And so the little free library is an example of that, the little free pantry. And so it's about taking pride in the community and identifying the needs of the community, and what better way of doing that is the experts of that community, right? The people that live and work in that community. So we love to see projects like that happen.
And another project that we should talk about, Erica, is Heard and Amplified.
Hey, yeah. When we began the lockdown, we weren't sure what was going to happen. You know, we weren't quite sure what needed to happen. We knew that we needed to plug in some things in the community. But as a writer, as a poet, I felt like I wanted to express some stuff too and write. And so we started with the first blogs. I think it went for 11 weeks, maybe, the first one, which was to be about kind of about working through the pandemic, working through a quarantine, distanced on Zoom, and the life in general, what was happening in the world, what was happening in the streets around it. And as we ended with that 11th post, it became apparent maybe weeks after that maybe we should continue it, but continue it with a more intentional purpose maybe. And so that's where the Heard and Amplified came in. And that is a moment of me speaking with community leaders, community businesses, owners, and residents who have been a part of the community growing and who also have been a part of the Glasshouse, been a part of the work that we've been doing, hearing them and then amplifying their message, amplifying their space. And we kicked that off with me interviewing Kathleen Jeter for Purpose Point. We kicked it off with that one, and that was an amazing blog to read, but it was a way of us, the collective, writing about those members that have made and continue to make differences in the community, and those that we can call partners, they can call us as partners, and then the business owners, some of us, we know them, the residents, we know them. So it's been fun interviewing them and talking with them. I've been able to talk to, as I said, Kathleen Jeter, Deborah, as a resident in the community. In that respect, it was about talking about how they saw the community and what they wanted to see more of in the community. And it's amazing to hear that and talk to other businesses within the community as well. And I'm excited to be able to have a voice in this kind of a way. Heard. Amplified.
And where can people go online to check out all of this from Glasshouse Collective?
Glasshousecollective.org. Under blogs, you will find a lot of Erica's Heard and Amplified. The color scheme is bright yellow and purple, so it's hard to miss. You can also find out more information on the Planning by Doing workshop, the work that's been happening at the intersection under projects, but it all lives on our website. And lastly, too, the survey will also live on our website and will also be on Facebook, facebook.com/Glasshouse Collective. And we are also looking to create a Glasshouse Collective Advisory Committee. And what we're asking is that residents, business owners, nonprofit owners, church pastors apply to be at the table as we make decisions in 2021, and that it's important that the folks that make up the community are part of that. And so it will be half decision making and then half capacity building. So we're going to launch our second SWAY cohort, which it's a People's Guide to Community Organizing, and it's a curriculum that Michael Gilliland from Caleb and Erica worked hard on that works with artists and residents to get them to be community organizers. Artists are actually incredible community organizers, and I feel like sometimes that it's not as noticed or invested in. And so this is an intentional way to invest in both residents and artists in that way. And so a lot going on. So we appreciate your time highlighting the good work that Erica and all the residents and neighbors in the neighborhood are doing.
Absolutely.
All right. Teal, Erica, thanks so much.
Thank you. Thank you.
Thanks, Ray.
You're listening to Scenic Roots. More in a moment. This is Scenic Roots. I'm Ray Bassett. The Jewish Federation of Greater Chattanooga is now streaming a series of documentaries online for the next 5 weeks. The award-winning films were produced in the United States, Italy, and Canada, and virtual events will accompany the screenings. Anne Treadwell is the Federation's program director. Anne, thanks for joining us.
It's great to be here, Ray.
Albeit virtually, but that's how we do it these days. And we have a lot to talk about because you have a lot going on there.
This month and into February is the documentary film series. It was started in 2013 as an outgrowth from our regular feature film series. This year's chair is Stephen Black, and he and a committee have put together documentary films that are extremely timely right now. First film that's coming up is called Shared Legacies, the African American Jewish Civil Rights Alliance, and it will screen virtually from January 19th through the 21st. And that's from noon on Tuesday to noon on Thursday. Then on the evening of January 21st, people from Chattanooga we have pulled together who lived through Chattanooga's African-American Jewish Civil Rights Movement. Bob Burrs, Herb Cohn, and Dr. Clark White will be talking with Michael Dzik, the Federation's executive director, about that relationship, how it's changed over the last 40 years, and how we can really push that relationship in the future. Just want to mention that in Georgia, an African-American new senator and a Jewish new senator. So it's a really timely conversation. Next week, January 26th through 28th, there is a different kind of film. It is in commemoration of International Holocaust Remembrance Day. The film is called Syndrome K. It is in Italian with English subtitles, but that shouldn't stop you because most people don't know that the physicians around the Vatican during World War II invented a fake disease, highly contagious fake disease, and made it so that the Nazis wouldn't come near the hospital or Jews, and therefore saved a huge amount of Jews in Italy. That film will also be available to screen to high school students and high school youth groups at no cost. And we follow up in February from the 2nd to the 4th with Rabbi Goes West. Now, some people have seen Fiddler on the Roof looking rabbis, and that movement is often associated with Chabad, which is an Orthodox Jewish movement. This is a rabbi who goes to Montana, where there are small groups of Jewish people, and really you get a better understanding of all the different levels of Judaism. And then February 9th through 11th, if you love food, you will love this next film. It's called Chudism, and it's a taste of Jewish Montreal in Canada. It's these two wild and crazy middle-aged guys going to every single Jewish restaurant in Montreal and tasting favorites. In addition to that, a short film on gefilte fish. Lots of people have heard about what gefilte fish is. but it's a short film about the making of gefilte fish. And then on Thursday, February 11th, we actually have a local Canadian-American cook in the Chattanooga area, and he is going to demonstrate at least one of the Jewish favorites from Canada, and maybe more. And then the series will finish up February 16th through 18th with Nobody Was Interested, Nobody Asked. And this is a film about Holocaust survivors. And after the Holocaust was done, how the survivors felt. And it's really an intriguing film. And then on Thursday, the 18th in the evening, the directors and producers of the film are going to talk about how they got the survivors to open up, how that whole piece matters in terms of not only dealing with Holocaust survivors, but dealing with victims of hate. And one of the underlying things this year is how we deal with hate and victims of hate and how to celebrate life. To find out about the film series, you can go to the Jewish Federation's website, which is www.jewishchattanooga.com. And there you can register to see the films. It's a kind of a unique process that once you register for the film and pay for it, if that's what's needed, not only will you get the link for the film during that period of time, you will also get the link for the discussions afterwards.
Just reflecting on the first film and discussion in the series, talking about shared legacies, the shared legacy between the Jewish community and the African-American community in this city, in the Chattanooga area, is far more robust than many people might realize.
Well, I think when people start to learn that during that period of time, the Main Street downtown area, that many, many of the merchants were Jewish and supported the dime store sit-in and supported other things that were going on in town, and that the Chattanooga Times, which at that time had Jewish ownership, was also extremely supportive of the civil rights movement.
And when we talk about the fake disease during the Holocaust, when we hear the phrase fake news, or we hear the words misinformation or disinformation, they have a very different context when it comes to this story.
Well, and one of the things we were concerned about when we selected this film, and our process is unique in that all the films are viewed by a committee, and we see between 20 and 30 films per series before selecting. But one of our concerns was people thinking that COVID-19 was fake and that Syndrome K was fake might make the incorrect assumption that it was the same thing. We debated about it for a little while, but we decided that it was very important to show the people, they're called righteous Jews, who saved Jewish people during the Holocaust, and how saving and giving support to both victims of hate is relevant to today, not only to things in the Black Lives Matter movement, to victims of hate that we've seen recently at the Capitol, just what are the things that people with ethical and moral standards have to protect vulnerable people.
And the film that focuses on the Jewish experience in Montreal, Jewish culture in Montreal, I'm reminded of Leonard Cohen.
So true. And, you know, I grew up in New York City. So, you know, there were Jewish delis and we knew who had specialties and where to go for whatever kinds of food. And I think, you know, we wanted something that was kind of fun and uplifting. This is fun and uplifting. And, you know, since it's followed by a Canadian-American cooking specialties, you can do it at home, too.
In this time where so many of us either are at home or we have been at home or we could be at home again because of the pandemic.
One of the things that my friends and I have joked about is that we've cooked more in the last 8 months than we may have cooked in the last 20 or 30 years. Because we can't go out to restaurants, and that we can't use the same old recipes all the time because our families and loved ones have figured out that it can be boring unless we inject something new. You know, why not inject some Jewish food traditions?
And again, where can people go online for more information and to see the films and the discussions?
So everything is available by going to www.jewishchattanooga.com, which is the Federation's website. And you'll see where to push to get all the information about the films. You can either purchase a subscription to the films, which would allow you to get access to all the films and all the discussions that, and cooking lessons that go with all the films, or you can choose to just purchase one single film at a time. You can always give us a call. Our telephone number is 423-493-0270. We'll be happy to talk to you.
All right. Anne, thanks so much.
Bye. Thank you.
You're listening to Scenic Roots on WUTC. I'm Ray Bassett. Thanks for listening to Scenic Roots. We come to you from WUTC at the University of Tennessee at Chattanooga. Email us at scenicroots423@gmail.com. Follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at scenicroots423. Listen to us online anytime at WUTC.org and the WUTC app. For Richard Winham and the rest of our team, join us again next time for Scenic Roots.